Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
South Africa's unemployment rate remains one of the biggest issues, problems facing the country. In his State of the Nation address a little earlier this month, President Ramaphosa highlighting public employment programs as key interventions. But the question, I guess, is are these measures enough to address the scale of the problem? Beyond government-led initiatives, changes in employment law could shape a more inclusive and dynamic labor market. But I guess the question is, are they going to make any meaningful impact? I'm joined now by Phethani Nkuna, director in the employment law practice at the law firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. Phethani, welcome and thank you very much for talking to us. So South Africa's unemployment rate does remain stubbornly high. There are new figures out today which says that we're looking at the latest data around 31.9% of South Africans unemployed. It's come down slightly, but it's still stubbornly high. From a legal and a structural perspective, what do you see right now as the biggest barriers to job creation in the country?
So, I mean, it's a variety of factors. We can't discount where we come from as a country. You know, we still remain quite an unequal society compared to other developing countries. I mean, we wouldn't even talk about the developed countries. So there is still that. We battle corruption. We battle infrastructure. I mean, we've just now gotten sort of right, Eskom, although not quite there yet, but we also can't discount the impact that that has had on the formal and informal sectors. So it's quite a variety of things. We can't really pin it down to one thing, but what I do commend our president on is taking into consideration where we are, the feedback, the constructive feedback that is on some of our employment laws, which have for a long time been criticized for being overly rigid, not allowing flexibility, being time consuming, and sort of adopting a blanket approach, not distinguishing between what we now have as the much more smaller employers versus the big employers, often distinguishable based on their pockets, based on their resourcing. So it is quite a positive step. We do commend what the president has now given direction on.
Which recent amendments then to employment laws are noteworthy, and do you think they're going to make a huge difference?
Let me just pick up the three main ones that we've had so far as at today in 2025. The first one being the Minimum Wage Act. So the minimum wage has been revised from 27 Rand 58 cents as it last year, effective from the 1st of March. It's going to be sitting at 28 Rand 79. That is around a 4.3% increase. And obviously, this applies to farm workers and domestic workers who we would know or may have read quite a few articles in the media speaking about how they were the most vulnerable when you talk about the workforce in South Africa. And what the amendments have also done is prescribed a minimum weekly allowance for those on learnership agreements. It has also made adjustments in relation to workers who are in the contract cleaning sector, as well as the wholesale and retail sector. Now, when these initially came out, when the announcement was made, there was criticism that came from different players, different stakeholders in the employment space. I'm saying that, but this indirectly inhibits employment growth, because how do you then expect a small business to comply with the minimum wage? And the act is not without relief, because there is an exemption procedure. So where an employer feels that I cannot afford this, they are allowed to apply to the department for an exemption. What they cannot do is unilaterally contract out of the minimum wage. You have to pay a minimum wage unless you've been exempted. So that's one of the big changes. I do believe that it's going to make an impact, because the most vulnerable in our society are not spared from the rising costs of food, rising costs of transport. So this really is intended to alleviate some of that pressure. The second big amendment has been the Employment Equity Act, which first of all has introduced a provision which enables or allows the minister to set numerical targets, which are really done in numerical targets in sectors. So far, 18 have been identified. We are awaiting regulations which will carve out exactly what this means, how this will be done. But the minister can set numerical targets, which are done in the spirit of advancing workplace transformation and equitable representation. The Act, the amendments have also now excluded from the definition of designated employer, small employers. So those employers, businesses that employ 50 people or less, irrespective of their annual turnover, they are now excluded from the obligations to comply with affirmative action provisions of that Act. And then there's also quite an interesting intended amendment, which has not necessarily taken effect as yet, but which requires employers or businesses that want to transact a contract with the state to have a certificate of compliance. So one of the things that will be taken into account when you're assessed for compliance is whether or not you're satisfied or complied with the numerical targets. It has also introduced, the amendments also introduced or broadened rather the definition of disability, which I do believe is quite a welcome amendment, where we are battling mental health and other issues in the workplace. Now, the definition of disability has been extended to include people with long-term or recurring physical, mental, intellectual, as well as sensory impairments, which either limit their prospects of entering or advancing employment. So that is quite a welcome introduction.
Pateni, let me ask you one final question, if I can. Regrettably, time is always against us, but I just want to look at dispute, if we can. We know that labor disputes are often a long-winded process, particularly at the CCMA. Do you have a view on how employment law needs to be adjusted to ensure that disputes are resolved efficiently, again, without undermining any kind of worker protection?
Yes, so that really has gone into what we have as the draft code of good practice on dismissals. It's adopted a decriminalized approach to workplace disputes. So as opposed to having a disciplinary inquiry or an investigation unfold like a criminal trial in court, I'm sure you've seen quite a few of those in the media. The draft code really seeks to reduce a lot of the administrative requirements that employers are expected to comply with, irrespective of the circumstances or their size, which is such a welcome introduction if the code in its current format, or at least an enhanced version, does make it through. And it also regulates some issues around incapacity that we've seen coming up from our courts. So what the Code of Good Practice, the draft, seeks to do is codify them, for example, how a senior employee can be distinguished from a junior employee when it comes to work performance, how you deal with substance-related induced incapacity, how you deal with somebody who's unable to work because they've been imprisoned, how you deal with somebody who's incompatible because they are causing disharmony in the workplace. It also goes on to regulate how you deal with dismissal when somebody has participated in an unprotected strike, as well as operational requirement-related dismissals. So all of that has been set out in the draft code of good practice, which is out for public comment.
And I am going to leave it there. Very comprehensive and important, both for employees but also for business owners as well. Pateni Nkuna, thank you very much indeed. Director in the employment law practice at the law firm Cliff Decker Hoffmeyer.